I'm not up here to talk about myself. I'm up here to give you a speaker. He is Tom M. He is from Pulaski, Tennessee. I've heard an awful lot about him and never had the pleasure of meeting him until this afternoon. And someone asked me, said, do you know enough about him to introduce him? I said, hell, he's a drunk, ain't he? What else you got to know about one of them that's going to talk in front of a statewide Alcoholics Anonymous meeting? But Tom is the Southeastern Regional Trustee for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I give you Tom M. from Pulaski.
Thank you very much, John. My name is Tom Moore, and he's already told you what I'm doing here. I'm a drunk, but thank God and thanks to you, I'm a sober drunk. My illness, for the time being at any rate, has been arrested, and my life has been completely changed through this wonderful program. I think I need to say that those of you that went to Augusta last night and had to sit through this thing, if you get up and leave, well, I'll understand. That may be the only way you're going to stay sober. Two nights of me in a row is a test for anybody. I'm also very glad to see newcomers, you know, sitting on the front seat. So often they get in the back, but there's Jim O and Joe C, brand new people in AA sitting up here on the front seat. And that does me a lot of good. We wish you every good thing in the world, and I hope you stay sober another 24 hours. As I said before, my name is Tom Moore, and if that name seems to ring a bell or sound familiar to you, you probably drank it. I've often said that I didn't have a chance. When they start naming the darn stuff after you, well, there's no question but what you need help. I've always liked the name Glenn. And I've got three sons, and I wanted to name one of them Glenn, but my wife said, a Tom Moore and a Glenn Moore and a drunk family? No, that'll never do. So we named the oldest one Tom Jr. That's getting pretty close. My story hadn't changed, thank God. The only way that we in AA can change our stories is either lie, that is from one time to the other, or get drunk, so that we can have a few more experiences. And I know it's trite, but I'm thoroughly convinced that in my particular case, I may have another drunk in my system. I probably do. But I'm not at all sure that I've got another recovery. And this thought, I hope, stays in my mind. It'll help keep me sober. Last night I mentioned, and incidentally, I'm going to take my watch out right now. I needed that meeting last night. I couldn't stop talking. I think I talked over an hour. And after putting my glasses on, that's to see what time it is. I've often said that, or did say rather, last night, that what I have to say is for me, and the fringe benefits, if any, I hope will help someone. This makes absolutely no difference to you or to me either, for that matter, that I'm in the category of the alcoholic that from the first drink was an alcoholic. I really think we are divided about 50-50. Those of us that take a drink and the compulsion immediately is effective, and those that drink for quite some time, in a matter of years in some instances, and all of a sudden they cross over that so-called invisible line into compulsive drinking or alcoholism. Makes no difference, really. But I took my first drink at the age of 14, and I'm on a skip now, quite a few years. Don't get nervous. I'm not going to take you year by year for 25 years of my drinking. I'll hit the high spots, and that has more connotations than just one. There were plenty of high spots, I guarantee you. But we all have this illness, if you prefer to call it that. And being in New York recently made me even more grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous is on such a foundation, that this illness has a solution for you and me and for hundreds of thousands of others to follow, in that it is an arrestable disease, and so far as I'm personally concerned, AA is the answer for me. I do not dispute or get in any arguments with any other method that some person might have to get sober, but I'm thoroughly convinced that the AA way has two benefits. First, sobriety, and the other is happiness, real happiness. And I've often said, if you can't be sober and happy, your chances are pretty darn slim. You and I, I'm sure, have seen many, many people sober up on their own, we say. But can't anyone tell me that that person that sobers up outside AA, he is happier, possibly, but he cannot be as happy as we are. In a gathering like this, well, the warmth, the feeling of communication, of empathy, is just something that's in the atmosphere that you don't find anywhere else. I go to church. As a matter of fact, I teach a men's Bible class. And I thoroughly, they all incidentally know I'm an alcoholic, is I'm not flying under false colors. But even in that men's Bible class that I've taught for quite a few years, there just is not the warmth that we have in AA. And this is something that I don't believe that you can find in any other organization, disorganized as we are, on earth, that you and I are fortunate enough to have in this fellowship. Now, I've already gotten away from my story. Now, what I've just said covers about 10 years, so I'm now 24. See how fast I'm getting along tonight, you people from Augusta? I had the compulsion, though, from the very first drink. I don't mean that I drank around the clock or anything like that. I mean to say that never from the time I ingested my first bit of alcohol was I able to take one or two drinks and stop. I go for 9 months. There's not any significance in that yet. That just happened to be the school year, and I went to a military school where drinking was an absolute expulsion offense. So I had no credit for that, for staying sober during those years, because it was out of fear. But to this day, and I hope I never forget it, from the first drink to this day, have I ever been able to drink normally, whatever that is. I've never known what drinking normally is. But I say that makes no difference. Whether we drink ourselves into this situation or we are alcoholics from the beginning, we all end at the same place. And so far as I'm concerned, again, we have the one answer that is the happy answer, and that's in AA. I've been sober almost 21 years, if I can make it till the 12th of November, and I'm extremely fortunate in that I knew that I was at the right place at my first meeting, so I haven't found it necessary, nor have I had a real compulsion to drink since my first meeting in AA. And for this, I am eternally grateful to the God, as I understand Him, and AA. Actually, AA came first, because through AA was channeled this grace of God that I have found that I am so dependent upon, and I hope I remain dependent upon it, or realize that I must be dependent upon this grace of God. So, you can see already, I think, that I love AA. I try to do what little I can in AA. I know myself well enough to know that if I get careless, if I start making excuses for not going to a meeting or making a 12-step call, that I'm in danger, and I'm in immediate danger. Maybe not you, but me. I know myself well enough that I can argue myself into believing that after so many years and after so missing so many meetings that, well, I just wonder if I couldn't take a drink. I know me that well. And I know the results of any such argument, I'd lose it. Well, depends on how you look at it. I'd win it one way and lose it another, but the ultimate would be a complete loss. So I intend to do what little I can in AA for my own benefit, and hopefully for the benefit of my fellow man and my fellow gal. I'm not going to go into this blow-by-blow description of my drinking. I did that last night, and from the length of time that it took, I'm afraid to even start. I will say that I went 2.5 years at one time without taking a drink after I had become an alcoholic while I was in the service and overseas. And this was the most miserable 2.5 years I ever spent in my life, because I resented, now I didn't know what was wrong then, I do now. I resented the fact that I couldn't drink. I was hard to get along with, you know, if you've been through any of that in forced sobriety. But I will tell you what happened when I did take the drink after I came back to the States. Because this experience is what I choose to say is the hell on earth for the active alcoholic. I got drunk, terribly drunk. I was in some hotel in San Francisco. To this day, I have no earthly idea what hotel. I don't know how long I was there. I don't remember much of anything except just brief little periods of consciousness, and then it was the bottle on the bureau and the bed, and the distance between the bed and the bureau was my ultimate in life. That was all I had thought I was living for. But in one of those brief moments of consciousness, I had that sensation that, or the realization that I had to get sober. It was not only a matter of life and death, but I had a wife and 2 children at home that I hadn't seen in 2.5 years. And I had to get in some kind of condition to get back to them. So I just knew, had that feeling of being convinced that I had to get sober. And in almost the same instant, knowing that I had to drink some more. As I said last night, I believe we could tell the non-alcoholic or try to explain to the non-alcoholic this sensation, and we could spend the rest of our lives, and they couldn't understand, and it isn't their fault. What we go through with when we have that first realization that we got to quit drinking, and at the same time we know we can't, or that we have to have more. This realization frightened me, but not to the point that I stopped drinking. As a matter of fact, I regret to say I had several more years, 4.5, of hard, miserable drinking before I found AA. I've heard this compulsion sort of compared to an experience that two people had. One, he was staggered from the bar one night, took a shortcut through a cemetery, and there happened to be an open grave there, and he didn't see it, and he fell in. So he'd jump up and try to get out, and it was sandy soil like you have here in Georgia, and he just couldn't make it, so he gave up and curled up in the corner and went to sleep. Well, it so happened that another inebriated gentleman from the same bar was taking the same shortcut, and he fell in the same grave, and he started jumping up, trying to get out, with no success, and he woke this fella up in the corner whom he hadn't seen at all. And this man said, "You can't get out," but he did. Well, I think that's sort of what we do. We say, and I said, "I'll never take another drink." And I suppose I had just about as much control as that fella did when he cleared the grave. So that, to that extent at any rate, it's an illness, and I accept that fact. I also believe in my own case, and of course this is all I can talk about, that it is a combination illness of the mind, soul, and the physical body. I don't know if this is a question you probably kicked around in your closed meetings. If someone comes up with a pill or some prescription that if you take that now you can drink again normally, what would you do? I don't know how many sessions we've had, and the answer is pretty well, you can pretty well define who's going to stay sober in that bunch and who isn't. The ones that say, "Heck yeah, I'd take it," so I could drink normally again. I enjoyed it so much, drinking normally, whatever that is. Of course, I've already told you, I never did know what it was. The other half said, nope, I'm afraid that then I would lose some of my AA associations and I probably wouldn't need AA. That's the bunch that I think is going to stay sober. And I believe you get the message. So long as we are happy in AA, so long as we have this fellowship, this empathy and love for each other, even if we could drink normally again, and we stop and think that we'd have to give up that empathy, that love and understanding that we have for each other, I don't think we'd take it or take the prescription. I know I wouldn't. So, but now again, you know that I am thoroughly convinced that this program works. It has worked for me when nothing else that I could see, feel, touch, or hear worked. So I know from personal experience that AA is successful if you'll let it be. Getting back to just a few of the highlights of my drinking, and when I say highlights, I want you to know why I say that. I was high all the time just about. And I let me stop here and say that I have to tell part of what happened to me at any rate, because if I hadn't heard part of what happened to someone else at my very first meeting, I seriously doubt if I would have come back. And I can't help but remember this, and I can't help but feel that maybe, just maybe, there's someone in the audience, someone in the group, that came in with the same distorted and crazy idea that I did when I came to my first meeting, and that they are the only one like themselves in the world, and that maybe they will hear something, not from me necessarily, but maybe from me, but from someone in their story that will let them identify and they'll be set up this communication of love between us. I was convinced that there wasn't another human being on this earth like me. And the reason I was convinced is somewhere back in my active drinking and in part of the, in the worst part, we'll say, in a brief moment of honesty, I had these two young children and I asked myself this question. After the compulsion had become effective, after it had set in, and I had just enough money to pay for some food for my children, and they were actually hungry, and the same amount of money would buy me whiskey after I had started drinking, and as I say, the compulsion had become effective, what would I do? I don't know why I got honest in this brief time, it is very brief, but I gave myself the horrible answer that I would have to have that whiskey. And this is when the loneliness that you and I know and I suppose remember of alcoholism became such a tragedy in my life, because I became thoroughly convinced that I was alone in the world, and this feeling of having to take whiskey over the welfare and the very life of my own children. I want you to remember that because of what I heard at my first meeting in a story. And I think this loneliness is nothing like it. All of these things you've probably heard before, so I'm talking to myself part of the time. I want to remember those things, as horrible as it was, as a constant reminder. They don't bother me now, except that I want to be reminded. That business of putting on a front, of lying, of saying there's nothing wrong, and inside, you know, just dying, knowing full well that there's no one else like you and being thoroughly convinced of it, that you're even devoid of the normal paternal instincts of the preservation of the young. And nobody can be so completely devoid of human instincts as me. And so we sit there and die of loneliness, thoroughly convinced that there's no one like us, and not knowing what to do. And this adds to the agony, except the only thing we know to do is to blot out this self with more liquor. And this is, of course, what I did. I think this is what a lot of the alcoholics do. That we can't stand ourselves, and the only way we can get away from ourselves is oblivion in alcohol. Or get off in that world of fantasy where we can imagine things and say, this isn't so. There's nothing different between me and someone else. And this is the whiskey down that's trying to say this, when you know deep inside that you've already answered the question that you are different from everyone else. Well, I had this feeling, and I did the same thing that I've just said. I had to get away from me through whiskey. I thought of suicide. I never had guts enough to try it, but I thought about it. I better stop here and say that I got married. My wife, I've already mentioned my two children before saying I've gotten married. She's often reminded me, I'd appreciate you saying that you got married first. It just sounds a little better. I'll also say that my four children and their ages pretty well chronologically tell you about my drinking. My oldest is 29. The next oldest is 28. And then comes this significant gap. I've been told that this is about the time my wife said that she realized I was not a social drinker. My next one is my A baby. He'll be 20 in January. My next one is 10. Now, if you ask me about him, I'm going to tell you to go to the devil. I ain't got no excuse. The only thing that I'm convinced of is that alcohol didn't completely destroy me. But this family, I think those ages can tell you something, except the last one. You can sort of add these things up. I didn't get married till I was 30. See, I put it off as long as I could. I said last night, and I'm going to tell this again because I love you, Al-Anon. My wife would be here tonight, but she's babysitting with the youngest one and getting the next one ready for go to sophomore year in college and babysitting with my four grandchildren. I don't see how she stays sober, frankly. It's really something when you swap babysitting with your own daughter. That's the funniest thing. It's a question on the weekend, who's going to call first? Whether we're going to call to ask the oldest one to babysit with our child, or whether they're going to call to ask us to babysit with the grandchildren. Oh, it's a great life. Incidentally, my two oldest, one of them was 7 and the other was 8 when I came into AA. And I've asked them many times, I say, ask them what they remembered about my drinking. And the boy, I think, has sort of erased anything from his mind. He says he doesn't remember too much, if anything. And my daughter says, Daddy, the only thing I remember is you stopping at a filling station every afternoon, and I regret to say this was taking them when I was able from school home. And at this filling station, I'd ask you what you're stopping for when you didn't get gas, and you said, tonic. And she said, I knew at 7 years old they didn't sell tonic in a filling station. And when I asked some of my little friends, they said, oh, that's the biggest bootlegging place, and she'll ask you. So that's what she remembers. That didn't leave too much of a scar. The thing that I am most grateful she does not remember, or has nature has erased from her mind, when she was about 4, and I came in my usual condition, maybe a little worse than usual, and she cried out, Mother, Daddy's drunk again. Well, you know what this did. That made me turn right back around and go get more whiskey. Come back and give my wife unshirted hell for telling my own daughter that her dear father was a drunk, or that she even let her know what the word drunk meant. This, I think, is typical. But let me go back to my story, and incidentally, I wandered all over the place before I'm through, but I'm going to quit on time. I like to tell about this Al-Anon, and she must have been an Al-Anon, that was in the maternity ward in the hospital for obvious reasons. The baby had already arrived when the nurse came in one day and said, there's a man out here says he's your husband. We've never seen him before. And this good Al-Anon said, is he drunk? She said, "Oh, my Lord, yes." "Is he trying to tell everybody how to run the hospital?" "He's been doing that for the last hour." "Is he cussing and using filthy language?" She said, "Yes, we've had to call him down several times." "But he insists on seeing this baby," says it's here. And this good wife says, "Well, I don't want to see him. Don't you let him in." She says, "As a matter of fact, I haven't spoken to him for over 12 months. So the nurse got out a little pencil and paper, and she said, "You know, we keep records in this hospital." And said, "We have to get the records straight. If this man is your husband and not the father of this child, well, we'd have to know about it." And bless her heart, she said, "Oh, your records are straight, all right." Said, "We never got that mad." So, you know, so you Al-Anons put up with an awful lot. You know, I told that story to a friend of mine. Now, honest to goodness, you won't believe it. I teach a men's Bible class, but I do. And I don't mean anything bad about this, but this did happen. I told this story to one of my good AA buddies. He didn't crack a smile. He'd been having trouble, domestic trouble. And he thought a minute, and he said, "You know, I'd be all right." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Yum, yum, without all the yak, yak." I don't think I need to explain that any further either. Well, let me get down to my rather peculiar entry into AA. I'll wind up what it was like by simply saying I went through everything just about that you did. And I was put in jail. But then the reason I wasn't is I was a darn smart alcoholic. I live in a small town, and I managed to drink with every policeman in that town. I lured them in, you know, and just almost forced them to take a drink, making preparation for if you ever arrest me, thinking all the time this is what I would do, I'll tell them you drank with me. So as a result, instead of taking me to jail, well, they'd move over and drive me home. I never was hospitalized, and the only reason is that when I came into AA, there was only one place to go, and that was a mental institution, and incidentally, I almost ended up there. The papers had already been prepared when I came into AA. I didn't know this for 2 years after I came into AA. Excuse me. My wife said she was afraid to tell me for 2 years that they had been before the judge and had the commitment papers, afraid that it would get me drunk or make me so resentful. And I just died laughing because I was so happy in AA for 2 years. Well, they could have said, "I don't care what you said, it wouldn't have made any difference." But I came into AA in a most peculiar way. In the first place, I was at that psychological, physiological place where I took with another human being one half of the first step. In other words, I was hurting so badly inside and everywhere else that in desperation I said, "Yes, I've got a problem with alcohol." Now, I said one half of the first step. Now, my sponsor was a non-alcoholic, Episcopal, younger than I by some years, minister who had gotten information from General Service Headquarters. And I think this is why I love that place, too, is because I can trace my sobriety and happiness directly there. He had gotten this information, and he practically abandoned his parish and his congregation working with alcoholics. He had also been to the old Yale School on Alcoholic Studies, I believe is the name of it. And he would dog my footsteps. Every time that I'd see him, you know, I'd try to avoid him because I knew what he was going to say. Something about my drinking. But he caught me at the right moment, and I took that one half of the first step. And he asked me about antabuse, that I ever heard about it. And incidentally, I was one of the guinea pigs, I suppose, on antabuse. It would just come out. Would I be willing to take this antabuse to keep me from drinking? And I said, "Yes, I'd try." Now, he has already talked about AA, and I said, oh, no, I can't afford to affiliate with anything like that. Why? What would it do to my law practice? What law practice? I hadn't had a client in 3 years. And what will it do to my reputation? I hadn't had any reputation except as a town drunk for a number of years. But you know how we are. So I said, yes, I'll take this antabuse. And I remember he had a brown sack full of those things that a doctor in a neighboring town, who was about the only one in that area authorized to give antabuse, had given him. And somewhere along the line, he'd gotten instructions all mixed up. He gave me this paper bag, and he says, you take two in the morning. Now, I'm not talking about two pieces. I mean whole ones. Two in the morning, two before lunch, two before dinner, two before you go to bed. I took 8 antabuse a day for 2 solid weeks. And I've often thought back, if I had gotten so much as a drop of shaving lotion in the corner of my mouth, I'd have been dead on hell. But fortunately, I didn't. And I need not tell you that I didn't drink, or I sure wouldn't be here. And after 2 weeks, I still wouldn't go to AA. He'd given me some literature, and I said, now, I'm smart, you know. Just give me that, and I can read it and understand it. And I don't have to associate with these people and ruin my reputation. And bless his heart, he was wise enough and knew enough about us drunks that he didn't force the issue. But after 2 weeks, I didn't feel so good. And he took me to this same doctor that had given him this supply of antabuse. And I told him, I said, I don't feel too good. I hadn't told him about how many I was taking at this point. And he gave me an explanation which was perfectly all right with me. He said, well, now, and I still believe it was all right. He said, you've lived, your vital organs have lived on alcohol for so long that they are now beginning to learn to function without it. And it causes a discomfort in these vital organs. And I said, well, we're taking 8 antabuse a day, have anything to do with it? And I thought he was going to hit the floor. He said, 8? I said, well, that's what you told Jack to give me. He said, I said a half of one and quit in 8 days. So I came through that all right. Now, the other peculiar part about my entry into AA is I was tricked into my first meeting. This young Episcopal minister had the reputation in this small town for having worked with these problem drinkers, you know. And so I would avoid him, even though I had been sober for 2 weeks. I would have on antabuse and fear. Still not happy. This is the reason I know I would never have made it. Still convinced, remember, that there wasn't anybody else on earth like me, because I had never forgotten that brief moment of honesty when I had answered my own question about the choice between whiskey and my own children. He came in the office one day, and there happened to be some strangers in there consulting me. And I say they were strangers because that's the only folks that ever came into my office. Those that knew me, they didn't show up at all. And he came in, and incidentally, this young minister was the kind that he didn't give a darn what happened. He carried his point, thank God. He sat down and he wrote out a little note. These people looked at him, and I knew what he was doing, but I looked at him and looked daggers at him. I wanted him out of there. People take a dim view of a stranger coming in when they're consulting a prominent attorney. And he handed me this note and he said, I'll pick you up tonight at 7 to qualify. You know, that's something we don't hear much in AA anymore. That used to be sort of standard. You take a new man now, I want you to come tonight and qualify. It meant simply to come to a meeting and say, I'm an alcoholic. That was qualification. And I agreed, because I'd have done anything to get him out of there, and he left. He and my wife, I knew something had happened to her because she quit pouring out my whiskey. I really thought she was trying to kill me. And incidentally, she did once. She'll never admit it, but then I know what she did. And after I had agreed, well, I went home that afternoon, and instead of being there at 7, the table was set for an extra person, and there he sat. It's 5 o'clock. He wasn't figuring on me getting away anymore. I'd already given him many excuses. So he had dinner with us, and at 7 I took off to my first meeting, being coerced and tricked into it. Now, here's an odd thing. I got to this meeting, there were about 8 or 10 people there, in a private home in Fayetteville, Tennessee. They opened the meeting. I was uncomfortable, felt out of place, didn't think I needed anything these folks had. They opened the meeting, they said, "We've got a new member, and he's going to talk." Now, this ought not to happen to anybody, much less an alcoholic who's scared to death already. And so I got up, and I don't know what I said except a very few words. And I said, "I'll tell you folks one thing. I'll never take another drink of liquor long as the day I live." Because I was full of energy. And I heard this little voice say, "For God's sake, make him sit down." And it was this little gal in the back, and she was the wife of another alcoholic, both of them. NAA, one had been sober about 3 or 4 months. The husband had been sober about 5, maybe 5 and a half months. To me, that was practically a lifetime. I didn't think it was possible, of course. Then this particular person got up, this husband and father. And I don't know how he read my mind or what happened. I've got my own idea that this was God's grace first making its appearance to me. But he said, "Last Christmas, we've got Christmas and Santa Claus age children. Last Christmas, my wife and I finally came to on Christmas morning." He said, "There wasn't any Christmas tree. There was not a gift, not even an orange. There wasn't a thing for those kids except 2 drunken parents that were too drunk and sick to even get out of bed." And I looked up, and there came the first little ray of hope that maybe, just maybe, I was not alone in this world. Maybe I was not so completely devoid of the human instincts of other people that I couldn't come back or couldn't affiliate with the human race again. And I left that meeting after hearing some more, determining and without any question that this was a sincere statement and that he was happy and that he had been sober for 4 or 5 months. And before I left that meeting, I knew that I had found something that I had been looking for. And the paradoxical thing is that we don't know, a lot of us, what we are looking for until we find it in AA. But I was thoroughly convinced when I left there that I had found something that I better darn well not lose. And then I began to grow slowly in AA. I almost got too happy, and I think you know what I mean. I got on cloud 9, and I wanted to go to meetings everywhere. I wanted to sober up everybody. And I was just completely happy. And I'd wake up in the morning, I did the simple thing they told me to do. Although when I started out, I didn't have too much faith in it, but I knew they had something, and I wanted it. I asked this higher power to help me through the day without a drink. And I thanked him that night. That's just about all they told me to do to begin with, and it sufficed. And I began to absorb the program and try to live it and work it. And I must tell this because this may sound like preaching. If it is, I'm sorry if you take it that way, but I'm fairly convinced for my own sobriety I have to rely on my God because of this experience. I'd been in AA about 6 months and had been happy. Trying to work the program, doing everything they told me to do. Asking God every morning to keep me sober and thanking him that night. And this young minister that was my sponsor and still is, he lives in San Antonio, Texas now, still working with us drunks. Still, he won't take a big church. He's been off of big churches, but he says that won't give him time enough to associate with us people. That's the kind of fellow he is. But I asked him this day after being in AA sober for 6 months. I said, "Jack, I'm worried about one thing. I'm like a lot of you others when you come in. You know, we want the whole thing right now. Can't wait to get the program as it is given to us. We want the whole ball of wax right now. I said, I don't feel the spiritual contact that I hear the others talk about. And what's wrong? I said, I have no urge to get back in my church. I'm perfectly happy in AA. And I just don't feel the contact that I hear these older people talk about. And he asked me a few simple questions. He said, are you asking God to keep you sober every morning? I said, yes. Are you thanking him at night when it works? And I said, yes. He asked the last question. He said, are you trying to just sort of improve your life in other facets and in every way as you go along in different ways? And I said, yes, I think I am. And he said, well, now just don't worry about the spiritual side of the problem. Just keep on doing what you're doing. And I'll tell you, I didn't worry, because here's a man of God that I figured his 24-hour-a-day job was to worry about people's spiritual life. And if he told me, well, if he told me anything, I loved him that way and had that much confidence in him, I would have done it. So when he said, don't worry, I didn't worry. About a year later, which would have meant not less than 18 months from my first entry into AA, I was either walking along the street or in the office or somewhere. I don't know where. It didn't really make any difference. But it suddenly occurred to me that for the last two or possibly 3 days, I had forgotten to ask God to keep me sober those few mornings. And in a brief moment, it frightened me. But in almost the same moment, I realized that during those same two or three days, and for many, many, many days before that, that not once, but maybe 10, 15 times a day, out of a completely sincere, honest heart, I'd say, thank you, God, for everything. Spontaneously, without any thought. And that's when I had my spiritual contact with God, because I couldn't deny what had happened to me. I had just subconsciously said to God that you're responsible for this whole thing. Without you, I am nothing. I thank you for it. Now, I don't mean to say that the asking wasn't and isn't important. I've gone back to asking. I know that it's necessary. The point I'm making is that the fact, when I realized I was so busy thanking this higher power that I choose to call God, that not asking lost its serious significance. And I'm constantly reminded of that experience, and I hope I never forget it. Because as long as I remember how I subconsciously and without plan or anything else admitted that God was responsible for my sobriety, my happiness, everything good, then I think I'm on safe ground. When I start thinking about, oh, buddy, you've done this, you've done that, look what you've done, and forget about that spiritual awakening, that spiritual experience and contact, I think I'm in danger. This may sound like preaching, as I say, but to me, this is the basics of my sobriety in AA. I think this is the foundation of AA. So, whether you accept that sort of thing or not, I heartily recommend, first, that you don't worry if you don't have the so-called spiritual contact, the conscious contact with God, but keep on doing what you're doing and don't fail to ask and don't fail to thank when it's given to you, this day-by-day sobriety. I like to say that, let me see what time it is. Yep, I've gone over again. I like to say that I wouldn't swap you people for any group of people on earth, people like you all over the world. I have the most comfortable feeling when I'm with AA, my AA friend. We were talking tonight how we can go to all sorts of functions, social functions, and I don't care what they are, with other people, and we get along. But when it comes to the communication of love, the understanding that you and I have with each other, we just cannot be as happy, at least I cannot be as happy with other people as I am with my AA friends. For this, I am most grateful. Now, let me close with this. This is not business, but it's a consoling thought to me. As you know, we lost our beloved Bill. But I thank God every day for Bill's foresight, his wisdom, his divine guidance in setting up the structure of AA, where when he did leave us, that it was on a sound footing. I've only been to New York one time as a trustee. I know very, very little about what I'm supposed to do even. But the trip was worth it for one thing. Don't you worry about the future of AA. We are in God's hands. We are in good hands. Thank you.